I recently took a trip to London, England. Some of you know about that and have been asking how it went. It was just me, my wife Louise, and one of my kids, my daughter Brianna, the three of us. And in addition to spending an entire day taking in the Harry Potter experience at Warner Brothers Studios, awesome, we visited several museums and art galleries. Needless to say, my photos of the trip are quite different than Brianna's photos of the trip. But for me, in both the Victoria and Albert Museum and the National Gallery and other museums, got to see Michelangelo's work, Da Vinci, Monet, Vincent van Gogh, many others. But my favorite was the opportunity to go into one room that just had the Rembrandts. Who's been in this room before? I could have stayed there all day. On our trip, we also took a tour of the London Royal Opera House. And by happenstance, our little tour group just got to enter the upper balcony right at the time during a rehearsal on stage of Verdi's opera Rigoletto. And the tour guide gave us a few more minutes to sit and take it all in. Rigoletto. Ah, I could have stayed there all day. Well, in preparation for today's sermon, Psalm 23, it occurred to me that Psalm 23 is worthy of being taken in like a room full of Rembrandts, or hearing a snippet of Verdi's Rigoletto. And so I tried to sit with it as much as I could. And one way that I was able to do this, you can jot this down if you'd like to later, there's a musical composition on Psalm 23 that Bobby McFerrin composed, and it's beautiful to sit with. All this because Psalm 23 is a beautiful poem, a work of art, a masterpiece. We may not think often of it that way because it's so familiar to us and we have such access to it. But it is some of the most well-known and the most beautiful and comforting words in all of Scripture. Psalm 23. The psalm is bookended, opening and closing, with the name of the Lord. Some suggest the climax of the poem is contained in the very first verse, in order that, maybe, if one were to miss the rest of the psalm, verse 1 captures it all for them. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. It's almost as though the rest of the psalm is commentary and expansion on that first line. How can we stop talking about it? Psalm 23 is a total of 55 words in the original Hebrew, creating a precise center, the 28th word in the poem, which is the word you, also in reference to the Lord. The thought at the exact center of the poem is the phrase, you are with me. How beautifully constructed, work of art, masterpiece. Psalm 23, sit with it. There is nothing static about this psalm. It moves, takes us on a journey. The psalmist is on the go, walking beside water, along paths and through valleys. It's a moving journey that this psalm takes us on. Walter Brueggemann often reminds us that the psalms are prayers spoken from the reality of life, not an escape from it. And theologian Ellen Davis describes the entire book of Psalms as a sort of atlas or set of maps. What a good way to think of the Psalms. An atlas or a set of maps that help us navigate our spiritual and human journeys. They orient us. They help guide us. They bring us back to the center. And they direct us to where we need to be, back to Jesus. Ellen Davis also notes that the 23rd Psalm is in itself a map and an entire atlas for us. The whole journey, a whole journey that wanders through landscapes that are both beautiful and frightening, up and down, ending in the house of the Lord. Maybe this is why Psalm 23 is so often recited at the bedside in hospitals or for grieving families at funerals. I work as a hospital chaplain, and Psalm 23, should be no surprise, is likely the scripture I recite most often at bedside, apart from the Lord's Prayer, Psalm 23. This is what people request. Bringing a sense of comfort, sense of guidance, sense of familiarity, and orienting us back to the center. The most prominent image is the image of the shepherd. We've been hearing about the shepherd in our prayers and in our litany today already. The shepherd. This is a psalm written likely by King David, who was a shepherd. We can imagine much of the imagery in Psalm 23 arose perhaps from King David's younger days, back in the sheepfold when he was tending his flock. Imagine him reflecting deeply on how his experiences there taught him so much about God, about the spiritual life, as he tended sheep. The shepherd, of course, is an image used to describe God throughout Scripture at various places, including our gospel reading for today that was read as well, John 10, 1-10. Let's hear some of those words again. Think of Psalm 23 as you hear these words. The sheep hear his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he has brought out all his own, he goes ahead of them. And the sheep follow because they know his voice. They will not follow a stranger, but they will run from him because they do not know the voice of strangers. You get this same picture in Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, and it's a psalm on the move. This is a statement of intent, as David says it. The Lord is my shepherd. It's a statement of intent, of commitment on behalf of the psalmist, proclaiming who it is that he is going to follow. The Lord will be my shepherd. Commentators suggest in the line that he leads us in paths of righteousness, that the word paths is better translated as tracks or grooves, as in the tracks of an ox cart. This is how that word is often used in Scripture. Such that we are led in tracks or grooves of righteousness. I like the way one preacher put it. He said that walking with Jesus is finding your groove. How's that? And a righteous groove. There's some millennial language for you. Jesus, the trailblazer of the paths of righteousness. Jesus tends us, Jesus guides us into right relationships with each other and with God. And notably in this psalm, The paths of righteousness do not lead directly from green pastures to the house of the Lord. No, those paths, those ruts, those tracks go right through the deepest and darkest valley. In Jesus' case, the paths of righteousness lead through a valley that is the way to the cross. And Jesus has shown us that way, and Jesus calls us to follow him. King David used these words, leading us through the valley of the shadow of death. And our good shepherd does not avoid this dark valley, does not go around the dark valley. We are guided and led right into and right through it. Amazingly, these places, the dark, deep valleys in our lives, places of great fear, we find that there is no need to fear because of the shepherd. Several years ago, I used to be pastor of another church for many years, and one of my experiences there is that I would often be the last person at the church after events or things that were taking place. I'd be the last one to leave to lock up and shut everything down and close up. One evening, I remember, an event ended, a dinner or something like that, and I was one of the last ones to leave, and I had Theodore with me, my little guy. Well, he's my big guy now, but he was pretty little back then. Little Theo was with me. We were the last to leave the church. And as I went through the church, turning off lights and shutting doors, we got to the basement hall. There was an entrance on one side and on the other side, but the light switches were only on one side that I used. And I turned the lights off and walked through to the other side in pitch dark. And I got to the other end of the hall and stood there, was about to continue going up the stairs and to the main floor, when I stopped and noticed that Theo, my little guy, was just standing there at the other end of the hall, unable to move, immobilized by the darkness. Theo at the other end, just standing there. And it was not enough for me to stand far away from Theo, holding the door and calling him to come over. He was not budging. It was only as I took the steps that were required for me to go towards him. And as I walked over to Theo through that dark room and extended my hand to him, that made all the difference in the world. Just by taking my hand and being with me, he was able to walk through the darkness. Nothing changed about the room. The lights did not go on. The room did not get smaller, and the path to the other end remained the same. All that changed is that I was with him. His fear was gone. His fear was gone. And we walked through the darkness together. Even though I walk through the deepest, darkest valley, I will not fear, for you are with me. The good shepherd, the great companion, makes all the difference. Notice again that this is the exact middle of the psalm. It is right here that there's a shift in relationship. There's a movement in voice. David begins the psalm in the third person. Notice, the Lord is my shepherd. He leads me. He restores my soul. God is spoken about. The shepherd is described. And then, without warning, in the dark valley, the poem turns to first person language. For you are with me. Pay attention to this. Suddenly, God is no longer a subject of reflection, but a close companion being addressed directly. That movement from he to you is not just poetic variation, it is a spiritual journey. It is our experience. It is our reality. The reality that it is in the darkness, in the deepest places, in the valleys, in pain and sorrow and suffering, in times of great adversity, when you've lost a loved one, or a job, or a home, when you're near the end of your life, when you're experiencing pain or sickness or disease, in all of life's struggle, whatever the valley might be, we are able to experience God most closely, most deeply, most intimately. The shepherd no longer described, but encountered and companioned. It is Mother Teresa that said, "There is no pit so deep that you cannot find God there with you." I also wonder if a person who talks much about God and thinks a lot about God and reflects on God, meditates about God, eventually finds themselves no longer talking about God, but talking to God. If that just happens. As it is, the valley is where God becomes the close companion in this psalm. The good shepherd leads through. Notice the psalm never goes back, really, to the third person. Once that shift happens, once that encounter of companionship takes place, once the hand is held, you remain. The rest of the psalm remains in that intimate space, and the shepherd continues as a close companion. Your rod, your staff, comfort me. You prepare a table before me. These lines, too, describe the activity of an attentive shepherd providing what is needed, accompanying, staying with, noticing and assessing what is needed, sustenance and guidance on the journey. And having found rest in green pastures, finding companionship to overcome fear in the dark valley, being sustained even when surrounded by enemies, David ends the psalm with a great word of hope. Having been pursued by enemies for so long, now, with the Lord as companion, he is only being pursued by goodness and mercy. And he's being led to abide in the house of the Lord for the rest of his days. Glory be to God.